This week, we invite Mitt Romney on the show. We hear he's not busy. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 52. Today is November 29th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
Jeremy sounds different this week.
I do?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
It's that snazzy new laptop you got.
Oh, well, do I sound more poor? Shell out the money for this thing?
Yes. You are now one of the 47%.
Do you find you go to the same stupid websites you used to go to with your other PC?
Yeah, I just get there faster now.
Yes.
This is my Obama laptop. Romney, he sucks. Man.
Nice. So I have an announcement here. We've joined Reddit for our listeners who are familiar with Reddit. It's a social news bookmarking site. And so we're going to start posting some of our links from the reading room on the call it a subreddit, the politics subreddit. And so I'll put a link in the show notes to that. And if you are a Reddit user, be sure to say hey to us. Our username is the MPP. So if you want to be down with the MPP, send us a note on Reddit. This week, we're going to talk about our little experiment here over the last several episodes. We started this question of the week thing, and we posed so far three questions to our listeners, and we're going to talk about those. So we'll start with Rob's question that we posted, a week and a half ago about looking at the electoral map and noticing the odd pattern of blue counties and red counties. Rob, what exactly was it that you were looking for when you asked your question?
Well, I think we all have the same, the usual things. Well, the urban environments, or maybe it's a racial thing. The urban blacks and Hispanics will support the Democrats because the Democrats are, cater to those groups, all the same stuff. And Jeremy made a little joke about poor people tend to live in concentrated areas. There was that little joke. And we all kind of realize, we all know that the cities are blue and the Great Plains are red. And I think we get all that. But what happens if you dive a little deeper? Like, I'll post something in the reading room of this little diagram that tries to rank the 10 best and worst educated states and how they voted. And this claims for best educated, meaning percentage of residents 25 years of age or older with a college degree or more. So concentration of college educated people. And hey, guess what? Look, the best educated are all blue states: Massachusetts, Maryland, Colorado, Connecticut, Vermont. The worst educated, red states: West Virginia, Mississippi, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Louisiana, rounding out that top five. So can we say that the blue counties are more educated or have more college degrees, which has its own connotations, I guess.
Right.
And what's the cause and effect there? What arrow does that causality point? Which way does it point? Is it that those with college degrees tend to want to live in more dense environments of Massachusetts and Maryland and New Jersey, or does it go the other way where that's just being in those environments turns you liberal?
Yeah.
something in the liberal environment.
Or maybe it's just the fact that getting a college degree makes you more liberal.
Right, which goes back to some indoctrination claims of the past few episodes.
Right. I take issue with them drawing the correlation between possessing a college degree and being better educated.
Sure.
Not necessarily a causal relationship, but you know, if you get past that, I honestly don't have an issue with what the point they're trying to make, that liberals are generally better educated than conservatives. I find that to be true, just, you know, in my own life's experience.
Right. And there's some other things in there. Like, I was fascinated when I looked at the county map that you'll see in there, that there's a blue streak that runs right down the Mississippi River, starting at like Memphis all the way down to the Gulf.
Yeah.
Right through Arkansas and Mississippi, and the, you know, all of that area is somehow blue.
Right.
And which I don't know, I have no idea why.
Right.
Maybe something in the water or something seeps up from the Mississippi.
And it is not at all densely populated areas, right. You know, not
so why
not urban at all. So yeah, why is that? That is puzzling.
Why is the Hollywood the liberal elite? Like, why are the arts and why are the arts a liberal thing?
Well, is it left brain, right brain?
I think maybe.
Play here's on what the emotions as opposed to logic and reason.
Here's what I think it is. I think it has something. It all comes down to some form of empathy. I think is what we're talking about here. I think there's something about identifying with people that are around you that is more of a liberal trait. And I don't need necessarily mean sympathy, but empathy. Me and my liberal friends, we feel like we're more like the people that are different than us than I believe my conservative peeps think. So when I hear about somebody losing their job and having to go to the food shelter because they lost their, you know, they lost their job and now they have these four kids and times are tough. Like, in my mind, I think that could be me. I'm like a hop, skip, and a jump from that being me. It's not me right now, thank goodness. I'm very thankful for that. But I feel like I'm a mere few tiny steps away from being that, or much worse. But I get the sense from some of my especially more radical conservative friends that when they hear a story like that, the first thing they think is, that's not me. That's not going to be me. And you know why? Because of A, I work hard. B, I save my money. C, I know what's up. You know, whatever it is. Like, there's a feeling that those people in those situations are not them. And by and large, it's those people's own fault that put them in those situations. That's the reason they're there and someone else is not. I think that comes down to living in a dense environment, living in a city. In a city, you have to mingle and mix, not socially, but just physically with that many people.
Right.
And I think that's what makes that's tolerable for the liberal mindset and like absolutely claustrophobic to someone that's not.
You might have some nuggets of truth there. I disagree with. I don't see myself in that situation because I work hard. I do think that, wow, I am, you know, on the knife edge. It wouldn't take much, and I would lose everything.
Right.
But that doesn't mean then I think I need to give what I do have to the government now, so they can redistribute that.
Sure.
That doesn't make sense to me. And
right. That's quite a leap, right? And that's the leap that's sometimes implied, I guess, by someone like me that says, well, if you're empathetic, then you must enjoy high taxes, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah, but I'm not sure I believe in the, you're talking about Hollywood and urban areas, people identifying more with each other, or people who are different from them seeing more commonality than conservatives would. If you ask, take Los Angeles, very blue here. People will tell you, people who have lived there will tell you that it's one of the phoniest cities in the entire United States, where it's not this come together, hey, we're all working for the same goal kind of a thing.
Right.
So I'm not, yeah, that might be an edge case, but
no,
I think you would see more of that kind of thing in the Midwest, in the throughout the heartland, or through, you know, typical areas known for farming, where people are going to welcome in others and try and help them out.
Right, right.
I may have gone astray of your point.
Okay, so does this red and blue county map, then, are we saying that it's indicative of things just beyond socioeconomic status? That it speaks to personality traits, maybe?
Right.
Yeah. I would like to see, I mean, what's the, I don't know if you could do this, but what's the breakdown? Is the red really red, or is it just barely red, or
yeah,
how does
I think Oklahoma's pretty red.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that everybody in Oklahoma voted Republican. I mean, that, right? That just means that.
Well, that's why you got the county by county. That's why the county and county thing, I think, was interesting. I think everybody knows Mississippi's a red state, but why is it blue on the left?
Yeah.
Or yeah, there's like a blue streak that runs right from like Atlanta through the Research Triangle through North Carolina up into.
No, I know what Jeremy's saying, though. I would like to see that, too, because, you know, right after the election, there was a story about one county in Texas where Obama only got 3 votes, you know, in the entire county. And so it's like, how many counties are there that are like that? And how many of them were like the 50.1% voted, yeah, you know, one color, and 49.9% voted the other color?
That's exactly what I'm getting at.
So yeah.
This map, it shows up as, well, it was only this way. Well, right. No, it's, you know, we're probably not as red and blue as this map indicates.
Right. But, yeah, that would be interesting, because I would predict that, like, Mississippi, then, instead of having that cluster on the left, it might be, you know, pretty much evenly distributed half and half.
Right.
And, yeah.
I would like to see an overlay of maybe highways or something on there, too. I think that might be. I don't know. Well, I don't know if highways would do it.
And points of interest?
Yeah, yeah.
McDonald's, you know,
Is it blue around Dollywood, or what? what are we?
Okay, well, since we're talking about the 50 states here, let's move on to Jeremy's question. His question of the week involved whether or not there are benefits to just eliminating the 50 state governments that we have and going with something, I don't know what, more efficient?
Well, I don't know if efficient is the right word to talk about when introducing governments, but yeah, it would theoretically, it would eliminate some of the redundancy. For instance, what is the big difference between North and South Dakota? Now, if you talk to people from there, they might say, well, those South Dakota people are way different from us here up here in the North.
Right.
But really, is there enough of a difference where you need 2 entire state governments?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And then make the leap, well, Montana might fall in there too, and take it regionally if it makes sense to eliminate these extraneous government positions.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys are watching Revolution on NBC.
I have not been.
Yeah. It's a pretty interesting show. I'm hooked on it. But the premise is, you know, it's post-apocalyptic. The apocalyptic event was that all the electricity went off in the United States. I guess the world, but, you know, the story focuses on the United States. And so the interesting outcome from that, I think, is that all these militias form just spontaneously, but they start carving up the United States into different regions, like you're talking. Huh. And like everything east of the Mississippi and like north of the Tennessee Kentucky border is now the Monroe Republic, you know, and it's ruled by this one general of the Monroe militia. And then, you know, the rest of the country is broken up into like four or five other regions. There was just one episode where they like flash a map, you know, it's on the wall showing all these different regions. So it's kind of what you're talking about, but
right.
You know, what I guess that I take issue with your question, because I think we should be pushing government down to a lower level rather than, I mean, what you're suggesting is that we simplify it and create, you know, fewer layers. And
true. And I can see part of the question was because I think the federal government is so dominant in our lives now.
Right.
But could there be an argument that if you form these regions, those governments would be more able to counter the federal government?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, if you really want to fix that, you know, you do it in two ways. You first of all, get rid of the income tax. And second, you go back to, you know, the way the Constitution was originally crafted, in that all federal expenditures had to be approved by the states, otherwise they couldn't spend the money.
Yeah.
So, you know, the states essentially had veto power over anything, any legislation that was passed by the federal government, because the state legislature could just vote to not fund it. And so, you know, that was a natural check on the federal government's power. But that was subverted by the federal income tax, because now instead of the money going up through the states, it goes straight from the people to the Fed, and then it rains back down onto the states. So,
yeah.
But, you know, on the one hand, I can see what you're saying. There's a lot of inefficiency in any state government, and we're basically multiplying that by 50.
Yes.
So, yeah. It seems like you could save an awful lot of resources by eliminating one or two of them anyway.
And in the Northeast, you have a lot of smaller states that are...
Right. Yeah, but I'm quite sure that the folks who live in New Hampshire and Vermont don't want to be grouped in with the folks who live in Massachusetts and New York.
Well, I think that even the Vermont and the New Hampshire don't want to be grouped together.
That could be, too, yeah.
Probably not, but they're all blue anyway, so what's the difference? According to this map.
Yeah, I mean, is it? And I have a hard time imagining what it would look like in the world where the states are really so much more different. I don't know if I can't even understand if that would be better or worse, or seems, I mean, it's so foreign to me. Like, the states seem pretty different. I feel like when I'm in Georgia, I've never been to Georgia, I'm just going to pick on Georgia. Like Georgia feels culturally different than Washington. Hey, I have been to Washington.
Right.
Well, yeah, but they wouldn't be in the same region.
Right, and you're trying to group states, but those states are pretty different from each other, and you know the things that smooth the main element that's smoothing that over like a big old trowel is the federal government.
Right.
Which acts to take all those differences and kind of smooth them. So when the hurricane hits Georgia, it's not just Georgians who are in trouble.
Yeah. Well, the natural balance of having all those different states and people being able to vote with their feet and move, you know, if one state starts infringing on their rights or imposing rules that they don't like, you might tend to lose that if then you start grouping them into these regional governments.
True. I don't know how much that happens, though. How influential is that of people leaving? And I mean, I hear about that. Oh, San Francisco, you know, it's a lot of people moving out of San Francisco because it's just too expensive. And are they really doing anything about that? I realize that's a city, not a state. But
well, yeah, I mean, are you asking, do people actually move?
I agree that people move, but what is the result of that? Okay, our population is a little bit lower. Big deal. We're still making the same poor decisions that led those people to leave.
Yeah.
Or is it, oh crap, we lost 10% of our residents. We need to figure out why and fix it.
I think Missouri is actually in that situation right now because the state population is dropping and, you know, people are going elsewhere for a number of reasons, I guess. But
it's because Missouri sucks.
Says the non-native.
Hey, I'm native Missouri. Born and raised, baby.
Well, I think there are obviously a lot of reasons why people move. And I think there are, you know, there are some reasons that government can control and then other reasons that they can't. But generally, you know, I think the people who move are the rich.
Right, because they can.
Right.
Yeah, because it's very expensive to move.
Yeah. So, you know, the policies are naturally going to form in such a way that you want to keep the rich. Right?
Right.
You don't want the rich moving out of your state. So it's kind of like that Harry Brown quote about, you know, free state doesn't care who comes in or who leaves, but the welfare state is afraid of every poor person who enters and every rich person who leaves. Every individual state in the United States has to worry about that same thing.
I like that quote.
How do you really feel about that? You like the quote, but doesn't that kind of go fly in the face of what you hold dear, Rob?
it points to another way of being that's would be so radically different than what we have now that I don't think it's feasible.
It does?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we're back to talking about Somalia and Iceland.
Well, maybe. I mean, I don't think Harry Brown meant it in that context necessarily. I mean, when he talks about a free state, he just meant a free state as opposed to a welfare state, which is
right.
What, you know, he considers what we have today. So an intrusive government that, you know, takes a lot of your money and redistributes it. Anything, you know, in opposition to that would be a free state. Not necessarily. I mean, Harry Brown was a libertarian. He was not an anarchist, so he was not in favor of eliminating all government. But yeah, we're kind of off in the weeds here. I don't think, you know, to answer your question, Jeremy, I don't think it's feasible, but it's certainly it's something to think about. And you know, I don't see any reason why states like you said, North and South Dakota, if they wanted to recombine into a single state to save money.
Although
the Constitution forbids that, I think. But
Who pays attention to the Constitution anymore? Federal government sure doesn't.
True.
It's
just a piece of paper.
Thank you, Ms. Pelosi. Of all the states, those are probably two of the better run states of the 50, at least fiscally.
Oh, yeah, maybe. It's too damn cold there. I don't want to live there. It's cold enough here.
Oh, geez. We're going to get on a climate change discussion now.
No, I was just thinking of Richard Jenny, the stand-up comic.
Yeah.
That bit he did about Chicago. He's like, I think that's how Chicago got started. A bunch of people from New York said, yeah, I'm digging the crime and the poverty, but it's just not cold enough. Let's move west.
That's good.
All right.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will finish up with listener feedback on our third and final question. So stay with us. We are back. Our listener, Eric, sent us some feedback on my question of the week, which was, who owns you? Do you own yourself? And if not, who does? Eric has this to say, I think you are setting up a false dichotomy. You seem to imply that ownership is an either-or proposition, and I think it's more complicated. For example, when your kids were newborns, did they own their bodies? They didn't have any say in what was put into their bodies, how they were treated, etc. So did you, as a parent, own them? And if so, when does that ownership stop? If you say they always own themselves, I'll claim that your concept of ownership is meaningless. And he goes on with a few other examples about comatose patients, fetuses. He says, you guys have avoided discussion of abortion, but I think it applies here. When do you begin to own yourself or even have a concept of self? How about conjoined twins? Most people believe they are two people, so I guess they have joint ownership over their body. I think, like most things in life, the concepts of self and ownership are fluid and gray and can't fit nicely into the buckets that a lot of people want to put them in. So, yeah, I mean, I think these are fair questions if we want to explore the exceptions to the rule. But I pose the question mainly for the implications for mature, able-bodied, mentally competent individuals. So I'm not really interested in the edge cases that Eric's given us there. Obviously, we're not born as adults, and it takes a number of years to develop the mental faculties required to answer this question and others. But, you know, I'm not willing to ignore the question or negate the question simply because conjoined twins exist. I think the question's still valid, but I am glad it was thought-provoking for Eric. I guess where I was going with the question is, you know, from a philosophical standpoint, is a lot of individual rights derive from this notion of self-ownership. And so I was asking our listeners if they own themselves, because if they don't believe they own themselves, who do they believe owns them? You know, is it God? Is it government? Is it their parents? Is it the guy down the street? You know, who is it? And I guess I would like to find somebody who doesn't believe that they own themselves.
I was all prepared to answer this, and then I read your mature, able-bodied, mentally competent, and I think you ruled me out. So,
right. Sorry, Jeremy.
Dang it.
I wasn't talking about you.
I think there are levels here. I agree that what listener Eric was talking about, there were quite a few edge cases there and might be interesting to discuss some other time. But I feel like I don't have full ownership of myself. Like there are a lot of lien holders on me.
Okay.
And yeah, I make a lot of my own decisions, but a lot of those are under duress. I feel like I'm company where I work, they hold a lien on me. My mortgage, the bank where I have my mortgage for my house, they hold a lien. And in the obviously one case, but also a philosophical, you know, situation there. City, the municipality here where I live, I can't build onto my house without them approving it first.
Yeah. So that's not so much you as the house. Like, they own your house if they can dictate those sorts of things to you.
Yes, but it's my...
Yeah.
It's my property.
Right.
I can't decide what to do with it without some other influence.
Right. So is it really your property?
Right.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I think those other examples are you know, relationships or contracts or whatever that you entered into voluntarily. So
yes, I did, but the ability for the other person to alter the contract outweighs mine. And I can always leave. Yes, there's always that.
Right.
But there's an impact there that it's not equitable.
Yeah, I could see that. It's the wage slave kind of mentality. I typically, you know, reject that because it's used to justify a lot of government intervention in the workplace, and, you know, whether it's enforcement of labor union contracts or it's occupational safety regulations, those sorts of things. And of course, the whole child labor that we've discussed on the show before. To me, employment is a private contract between you and the employer, and nobody else should be involved in that contract. And I think we've discussed this on the show before too. I recognize that there are certain situations where people will feel as though they're a slave to the company they work for. You know, you picture the stereotypical mining town where everybody works at the mine because that's the only work there is to have. And so all those people are essentially slave labor to the mine.
Yeah.
I don't deny that those situations exist, but in the end, those people are not really slaves. They can walk away at any time. And I think to call them slaves does a disservice to people in this world who are truly still slaves. You know, they're being forced to work.
And that is true. And they do. One of the radio shows I listen to, they talk about first world problems.
And, yeah.
The batteries on my TV remote failed
right
when I was watching football or something.
So I have to get up and change the channel manually. Yeah.
Right. So, okay, quit complaining. That's a first world problem.
Right.
And my views on the lien holders in my life, these are first world problems.
Yes. Because
I am fortunate enough to be able to own a house. I made the choice to own a house.
Right.
However, I'm not sure there's anywhere I can go and live where I wouldn't have somebody weighing in on how I'm living.
Yeah.
Maybe Montana, but even there, I'm sure.
Rob, you've been conspicuously silent.
Pondering. It's interesting that you for those lien holders on your own life, like government is one of those. You know, they want a chunk of your money, but you also have a number of powerful private enterprises that got you by the you know what's
right,
and yeah. So you're feeling like that you don't really have the freedom to. If you feel like you don't have the freedom to live a free life without slaving away at the job, I mean that's by design by corporations. That's not the government didn't create that situation. As a matter of fact, one fascinating thing I've been thinking about recently is the thoughts in the like the evangelical conservative community are kind of trained by rote to dislike the president. You know, whether it's for, you know, mostly for social issues, you know, don't ask, don't tell, whatever it is. But when they look at, it's fascinating to think of what do they see when they see a more free market economy that they're pushing. For example, look at Target opening at 7 a.m. on Thanksgiving Day, and best people standing outside at Best Buy at 4 a.m. This is the capitalist corporate culture that's pushing on us constantly and hijacking their one of their most sacred Christian holidays so people can get iPads at 4 a.m.
Right.
And that's human selfishness, but it's also an economic model and an economic sense of priorities that are pushed by Republicans, is what I say. And
why are those pushed by Republicans?
Because it's profit and market at all costs.
Yeah,
and anything.
I don't see the Democrats trying to do anything about Black Friday.
No, I don't either. But say they came out with some idea of let's impose a national law that retail outlets can't be open until 12 o'clock on Thanksgiving Day, so that maybe the people that have to work there, because that's their only job, maybe they get to have breakfast with their family or something. Say they put that out. What would we hear? I think that would be a kind of a stupid law myself. But what would we hear? What would be the retort to that? It would be socialist governments stomping on capitalism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which it probably would be.
It is, and that should be the...
Right, but isn't there any... Where does all the morality go?
Yeah, right. Why wouldn't the right wingers be in favor of it? Because it, you know, promotes traditional family values.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's true.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about something somewhat trite here because we all know that for a certain segment of the population, a large segment, that social issues pretty much drive whatever team you're going to root for, and then you want that team to win so bad you take everything that comes with it. But and we all know that happens. That's not all that interesting. But
no, I think that's a pretty good illustration though of the schizophrenia, you know, within like the Republican Party. Not saying there isn't corresponding schizophrenia in the Democratic Party, but That's a pretty good example, actually, to illustrate that.
Yeah,
you know, you pose that to most hardcore right wingers, that I think their head would explode. They wouldn't be able to reconcile those two opposing viewpoints,
right,
within their own party.
And I feel I share the conservative doom and gloom about state of the nation and stupidity of people. Like I have the same feeling, like what you'll hear in these crowds is like, the country's just not like it used to be, you know, we're just going down the wrong path, you know, all these sort of nostalgic kind of things. And I agree with them, but not for the same reasons. I don't think we're going down the wrong path because we might have gay marriage in Massachusetts or something. I don't think that's what they would say. That's indicative of our incorrect path. I think we're going down the wrong path because we're worshiping at the god of capitalism at all costs, that we allow it to tell us what is good and what is bad and what has value and what doesn't. Now, when I say value, I mean capital V value, not value with how much does it cost to buy a $249 Rubbermaid laundry basket. Not that value, but value. We have lost the sense of what is really worth something, and we've applied a shorthand to it, which is how much money does it cost? How much money does it make? Does it make profit? If it makes profit, something makes $10,000 profit, that's a good thing. Something makes $20,000, that's twice as good.
Right.
I don't see that as government.
No, I don't see that as government either. But I think that's I see it as our endless, it seems, and it seems It seems American. It seems more American than other places. And it seems so. That's why I think that this problem is more our country thing. Like there was the video that came out on Drudge, of course, you know, and everywhere else too.
Exactly. Don't villainize everywhere else, Drudge.
But of course. Oh, I have to villainize Drudge. It's what I do.
That's phony. That's phony.
You know, of the people fighting for cell phones on Black Friday or whatever it was, and I thought, I don't know, it sickened me. It's like, didn't it seem like 10 years ago you had parents fighting over Tickle Me Elmos? You know, they're out there for some toy for their kid that some genius marketers have somehow convinced the parents of America that they somehow need a Tickle Me Elmo. But they're out there like elbowing the other moms while they're trying to get the Tickle Me Elmo because they want the Tickle Me Elmo for their kid. And we like facepalmed that before there were facepalms. And we said, what's going on with the world? But look where we've come now. Now we're fighting over cell phones.
Right.
Like it seems so like gross and cynical. Like it's not even for the kids, you know? And if it is for the kids, why does the kid need a cell phone?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, but why are we creatures that have been endlessly fed this message that we need a cell phone? That's not the government that's doing that. That's the free market that's doing it. That's very crafty people that have been paid a lot of money to teach us what we want to have. And I think that's what's making the country go down the crapper. It's not whether the fact that Jim and Jerry can get, I was trying to pick up two names for a gay married couple in Massachusetts. Sorry to get so close to you guys. But, you know, like those two dudes.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right. Those two guys getting married in Massachusetts, I don't think is our problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. That's not the problem. So I agree that people trying to tell them they can't is part of the problem.
Yeah. I would agree with that too. So this made me think of a quote. This is Robert Heinlein, if you know who that is, science fiction author, born in Missouri, actually. He said, "Moving parts in rubbing contact require lubrication to avoid excessive wear. Honorifics and formal politeness provide lubrication where people rub together. Often the very young, the untraveled, the naive, the unsophisticated deplore these formalities as empty, meaningless, or dishonest and scorn to use them. No matter how pure their motives, they thereby throw sand into the machinery that does not work too well at best."
Makes me want to read some science fiction. Nah.
So, you know, I think what you were just saying is we're witnessing, you know, generation upon generation that are throwing more and more sand into the machinery. They're not recognizing the importance of just being polite, you know.
Right.
The common courtesy is not common anymore. And so, yeah, that leads to a lot of issues, like, you know, you said, with people fighting over cell phones on Black Friday. It's ridiculous. But I think I agree with Jeremy's point as well. Telling people they can't do that is not
right.
Is not tenable either. So
right, the solution is not to create a government program that slowly disseminates cell phones in an orderly manner.
Or
they already have that program.
Just walk nice right into that one. That's classic. I had no idea that was going to happen.
Yeah, or, you know, forcing kids to learn manners in school, right?
Right.
Do we do that? I don't know. Do schools do that now? It doesn't seem like they are.
I don't think they do it enough, but it's... Why is it that certain people can recognize that this Black Friday craziness is eroding what we have, or what we had, maybe?
Yeah.
And other people, they live for this day, and that's, you know, there's even evidence that these Black Friday deals are no deals at all.
Right. Right.
So it's this fake drug. It's a, you know, a placebo of I'm saving money and you're not.
Right. And why are they going crazy? Why are they tearing at the plastic to get at these things? It's not for the item, right? They're not even coveting the phone itself. They're coveting the idea that they've saved more money than the next person.
Right.
And patting themselves on the back for being, you know, extraordinarily clever.
Yeah.
You know, but what teaches that? What teaches that thought? I don't think the government's teaching that message. The government might be teaching that it's okay for Billy and Bobby to get married with their don't ask, don't tell or whatever it is. And we could talk about the government teaching by its policies, teaching things that aren't that maybe we don't want taught. We talk about that every week. But what is teaching that lesson?
I think it's if it's the government teaching anything, it's teaching that it's not fair that guy has something that you don't.
Right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's class warfare, right? I mean, that's how we characterize that.
Yeah.
It's keeping up with the Joneses. I mean, I don't know how much of that is institutionalized within government. I think, you know, the politics that are a manifestation of the people in government lead us to talk that way about, you know, how we behave as a society. But I don't know that I would go so far as to say government is teaching that.
Yeah, I can accept that.
I don't know. I'm sounding more socialist as we go along here.
Is that possible?
Yeah, it's kind of.
Just going to get so left, I just wrap around to the other side.
Finally, hear yourself being so socialist.
Yeah, and I guess, and this is where I kind of come down is I recognize the fault in that market system, but I'm not one to claim that the government can fix it.
Yeah,
I don't.
You know,
why should it not be? We as humans need to recognize that this doesn't have value. It shouldn't be that anybody needs to go fix this and prevent people from committing the battle for the cell phone or whatever the shoe,
right,
or whatever. It's figure out why people are not seeing through this phoniness of all of this.
And well, I know why.
Hey, I'm not going to participate in that because that is not, that does not have real value.
Right. So is the media being irresponsible by reporting it?
Reporting which thing?
Of, you know, sensationalizing these videos of people fighting over cell phones and elbowing each other for toys. And I mean,
I don't know that it's irresponsible to report that. I mean, I would think, if anything, maybe that would help bring to light that this is stupid. But
maybe
you're right in the way they report it.
Maybe, but I'm just thinking that if we can all look at that on TV and agree that it's bad, then, you know, why does it need to be reported? Because it's just, in the end, it's going to make us feel bad about ourselves as a people. Well, you know, it's like, God, look at all the losers I have to live on this planet with, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, would we be better off if we just didn't know that was going on?
I'm not a fan of ignorance is bliss. I don't know. As a side note, I saw shoplifting tonight and a lady being rude to me in the store, so it's not just on Black Friday.
Okay.
So what shoplifting did you see? Do tell.
I was at Sports Authority, if we're allowed to name a specific store.
Sure.
They're one of our sponsors.
I was overlooking at some equipment. I was at the front of the store up by the doors. Well, I heard all this commotion. At first, I just thought it was a couple of people jacking around with some other equipment. But then I turned and looked. I saw two guys running out. Well, I shouldn't say guys. They were young kids running out of the store And there were two employees chasing after him saying, drop that, put that down. And they, and then I, one of the employees came back inside, called the police, described, there were actually three young, teenage guys.
Utes.
Yep. So that was that. And then I went next door to Lowe's, and as I was checking out, the guy ringing me up asked me, they always ask you for your phone number there. I never give it to him. But in the middle of that, some lady just walks up. Yeah, can I buy gift cards outside? And he stopped what he stopped helping me to answer her question. And I had the impulse to turn to her and say, hey, he's helping me now. Wait your turn.
That's right.
I didn't, because I thought it's not worth that. But then after I left, I thought, you know what? It was worth it.
Yeah, right. Like, do you mind? We're trying to have a civilization here.
I'm so irritated with myself that I bit my tongue and held back. I thought, yeah. She needed to be told that is not acceptable.
Right. Because apparently her parents never told her as a child that was unacceptable.
I mean, this lady was, she's probably in her 50s. I would say she was in her 50s. But it's that we've lost that, hey, it's not yet my turn, I need to wait.
Damn baby boomers.
Damn baby boomers. Ugh.
Think they're entitled to things. Greatest generation, my ass.
You know, heard enough about that already.
Okay, so a couple links I had in the reading room that I wanted to mention just briefly here. These are a couple of little nuggets. One is a story about St. Louis County Police have these automatic license plate registration cameras, you know, that read your license plate and record where GPS location and everything. So, you know, all of that is obviously controversial enough, and I'm opposed to it. But that's not the part of the story that really, like, burned me up. It was they're talking about the benefits, the potential benefits to having the system in place. And, you know, the story starts out with them describing how they tracked down a gunman who had been involved in a shooting downtown because witnesses were able to give a partial license plate number and, you know, a description of the vehicle. And so they just, you know, typed that into their little database, and they were able to find that this vehicle had been spotted numerous times in a certain apartment complex. So, boom, they know where the guy lives. They went and picked him up, arrested him. You know, everybody's happy, right? So then they go on to say in the story, times and locations are logged and saved with the images. Officer William Belcher of the St. Louis County Police said his department's cameras have resulted in hundreds of arrests and, quote, lots of guns and drugs being found, unquote.
What?
Yeah. So, you know, that's the part that, okay, if you want to talk about the liberal bias of the media, it's those little things that I think are an indication of that. Because, first of all, there's nothing wrong with having guns, okay? Guns are perfectly legal. And so for a cop to say that they have, you know, resulted in hundreds of arrests and lots of guns and drugs being found, what does that mean? Right. So you found some guns. Guns are legal. And drugs? Well, guess what? Drugs should be legal too. So just because you found a bunch of people with drugs doesn't justify this, you know, Big Brother draconian.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's just, you know, whenever I see that, and it happens a lot in stories where, you know, they're interviewing cops and the cops are talking about how they found guns and drugs, and sometimes it's just guns, you know, it's like, ooh, guns are bad, you know. So no, they're not. But that's the immediate reaction. That's what they're going for, too. That's, you know, that's why they use that in these stories, I believe. So, all right.
You make a good point.
And then another headline that caught my eye was motorcycle deaths and injuries cost $16 billion. And it's a story about, you know, mandate laws basically, and how there's still several states that don't have mandatory helmet laws. And, you know, obviously I'm opposed to helmet laws, but I just, you know, why should it cost me anything if some idiot wants to kill himself on his motorcycle? Why is there a cost to that, to me, you know?
That is a good question.
Well, it's like the question, right? Because it does cost you. And so at some point we've decided that it costs everybody.
Yeah, and that was a bad decision.
Right. Yeah, that's really the root cause of all this stuff. Of all the stuff about healthcare is somehow we've decided that it matters. That it matters to you if I drive around like a lunatic. Or even if I don't, and just get hurt.
Right. I mean, you get hurt. But that should not cost other people money because you got hurt, or because you made a poor choice, or because you engaged in risky behavior. All of those things are what we call freedom. And so because you live your life and you do the things that make you happy in pursuit of happiness, that those that, you know, and if sometimes you're, you know, a victim of misfortune as a result, that shouldn't cost other people money. So something's wrong with a system that causes that.
I would tend to agree.
All right, good. All right, I think we've reached the end of the road. With or without a helmet.
I say no helmet.
Yeah, I mean, I would wear a helmet because it's the smart thing to do. But it shouldn't be a law. Okay, so thanks to all of our listeners. And keep those comments and feedback coming. We'd love to hear from you. And we will see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
Whenever the government is involved, there's an element of compulsion. Yes. And the effect of compulsion is always to strip the virtue out of a transaction. If, Michael, if you and I are walking on the beach and I'm hungry and you have a sandwich, and I say, Michael, I'm hungry, give me your sandwich. And you say, yes, here it is. I say, thank you. Now, that's a moral transaction. You feel good about having done something good. I feel a sense of obligation. Maybe someday if I'm doing well, I'll share my sandwich with somebody else. But now here's a third situation. You and I are walking on that same riverbank. I'm hungry. You have a sandwich. And here comes Obama on a horse. He gets off the horse, puts a gun to your head, and says, Michael, turn over the sandwich to Dinesh. And so you do. And then he puts his gun back and he drives away. Now, the outcome is the same. I mean, I have the sandwich. But the moral content of that transaction is completely different. You deserve no moral credit. You didn't give willingly. I don't even feel a sense of gratitude. I feel a sense of entitlement. I feel that you actually owe me 7 sandwiches, but you only gave me 1. So you can see how the whole thing is confused when you bring in the element of coercion.
Indeed.